Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Making Data Actionable in RCM. The presenter is Seth Mayhew, CEO, Bird Rock Laboratories, San Diego, California.
Good morning, everyone. Hope everyone's doing well, and this is early, but it's actually exciting and worth it because we have Seth here presenting, Seth Mayhew, CEO of Bird Rock Laboratories in San Diego, California. And the presentation is Making Data Actionable in RCM. I wanted to also let you know that in your Whova app, you can ask questions as well as provide feedback for the session. And I will be tracking those questions and I will share them with Seth as we go along. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, all six people that we have here at 7:30 in the morning. I guess I can wait and let people filter in a little bit. Hope everyone got some breakfast and coffee. We've just quadrupled our numbers. All right, I'm going to go ahead and get started. This is me. You may not recognize me from this photo. Allow me. There you go. My name is Seth Mayhew. I am the CEO of Bird Rock Laboratories. Bird Rock is a small clinical lab out of Southern California. We do toxicology testing. We do blood chemistry testing. We do PCR for infectious disease. We've grown and built a little bit over time. We started initially, my partner and I, we had taken over a small tox-only laboratory that was doing just enough sample volume to cover like a free hamburger at Bennigan's, I think, once a year, give or take. And we grew the business on the toxicology side and then added chemistry to serve our customer base, and then over time we added PCR. So I think that makes us pretty much right on dead center, top of the bell curve for laboratories these days. My background is primarily in sales, so I have to hire other smarter people to do the science things for me, and we've done a pretty good job, I think, of building the laboratory over time. Since we started, we've seen 5,300% growth, which seems really impressive until you go back to the aforementioned tiny laboratory doing, you know, a coupon at Bennigan's worth of volume. But if anyone has any questions about me or my background, feel free to fire them at me. So today we're going to talk a little bit about making data actionable in RCM, and really what I wanted to speak on were the specific tools and efforts that we put in place at our laboratory to take it from a very small, unsophisticated lab to a small, medium-sophisticated lab. We are simply not of the size to be able to command utilization of tools like Xiphon, really complex workflows and processes. So we've had to sort of home grow a lot of the tools and the workflows that we have in place. And we've done a pretty good job, I think, at building up a laboratory from a fairly small crew. We've really endeavored to be as streamlined as possible to mitigate the unnecessary staff. I would prefer to have a very small team of very talented people than to try and solve problems by throwing a lot of people at those challenges. So, yeah, a little bit of background, or further background on Bird Rock. We're in 30 states, give or take. Ups and downs, depends on the volume, month to month, based on the customers. We're COLA accredited, we're CLIA licensed, we've passed all of our CAP proficiencies for the last 800 consecutive quarters or what have you. We do now have a location in Texas, as I'm sure many other laboratories in the space do, with requirements regarding Z codes. And we have historically, like many small laboratories, had some challenge around the RCM process, When you're a small laboratory, you're running off of your own billing team, you have all of your own sample processing happening in lab with really only one send out sample or assay, you're sort of pigeonholed a little bit, I think. And it can be a little bit challenging to identify the areas where there are opportunities for improvement. So the current RCM process, or what I think of as the current RCM process, is the process for really, really small labs to try and navigate the various payer challenges that they face. So there are obstacles related to receiving samples and the associated data with those samples, processing those samples, because there are limitations around the data integrity of the samples that you get, right? If the sample rec form is legible, if you are still receiving paper rec forms. And then you receive those samples, you process them, and then you have to silo the various challenges that you have on both the front end and the back end. You've got to structure a team around resolving exceptions that's mismarked recs, and then you've got to have, once those samples are actually processed through and you can, you know, get clarity on what the intent to order was, then you've got to manage various denials, you know, medical records, prior authorizations, all of the different obstacles that laboratories in this space are required to overcome in order to actually get paid for their work. And then on the back end, how do you improve that workflow in such a way that you can streamline that process and continually develop the, you know, the data management and the actual processing and billing of those samples to streamline costs down the line. So I wanted to speak primarily to a handful of different tools that we've used that have improved our workflow. When we started, this is a true story, and I hope everyone rolls their eyes really aggressively. When we took over the laboratory that we're in today, the methodology for delivering results was, and this is, again, 100% factual, the CLS would open the one Microsoft Word document that the lab had on file, delete old patient information from said document, manually retype the ostensibly correct information, manually print the Microsoft Word document, walk the file, paper, physical piece of paper, down the hall, place it into a fax, dial the fax number, and send. So, with that in mind, a lot of opportunity for improvement, and of course that 5,300% volume increase seems a lot less impressive. So one of the things that we have implemented is a substantially improved LIS system. NeuroLab is the RCM side of our LIS system, and it does a significantly better job of, for us, siloing challenges and managing the different workflows of simple things like claims to be billed, claims that have been billed, right? Everybody here, I assume, has probably a reasonable RCM, so I won't spend too much time speaking to the RCM side, but I will say that as a small laboratory, it's essential to have an RCM that is willing and able to communicate with you on an IT level fairly directly and has a good response time for developing workflows or implementing different tools and strategies in order to meet the specific needs of your lab. I know with a lot of the larger RCM platforms, things are sort of established and you have to submit a ticket and it takes weeks to get that ticket acted upon. With a smaller RCM platform, there's often opportunity because, much like Avis, they try harder. You can get feedback from them at a more granular level. You can get implementation of specific things more quickly because they, by necessity, are more customer service-based. Another tool that we use is Shadowbox. Shadowbox is an integration tool. It allows our LIS to communicate bidirectionally with various customer EHRs, and that obviates the need for costly and laborious direct interfacing with various EHRs in the industry. I really like the Shadowbox tool. I don't know of a lot of, or really any other tool that does precisely what they do. My background, working in the toxicology space, we would have a lot of customers that would be interested. They would want to work with our lab, but they would be hamstrung by the interface that they had, right? They're not going to switch from wherever they were, that was whatever laboratory they were at, that was interfaced to our lab without such an interface in place. Shadowbox does a really nice job of mapping various EHRs and then directly connecting the LIS that you have with that EHR and allowing an order to come through directly. What I like about that is that it takes a lot of the effort off of the staff, our staff, from an accessioning workflow standpoint, from an RCM workflow standpoint. When a result, or a, I'm sorry, an order comes in from Shadowbox, that order is directed entirely by the physician office, right? They're choosing the drugs, they're choosing the ICD-10 codes, what have you, and that's going directly to us. There's no opportunity for our staff at the accessioning level to mistype, put the patient date of birth in incorrectly, to, you know, grab the wrong ICD-10 code, because Shadowbox captures a lot of that from the customer EHR directly and sends it to us. One of the features that I'm looking forward to that Shadowbox hasn't fully implemented across their entire range yet is the ability to pull down chart notes, because that on the back end allows us to make medical record requests or do pull down from EHRs without having to go through the process of getting the phone with the rep calls the practice says, yes, I'll do this, the practice then ignores doing that, then the rep goes back in. It's the whole back and forth that is reliant on salespeople as administrators that I think we all know is not terribly effective. So getting all of that and being able to pull it down on demand has been really, really helpful. And from a workflow standpoint, I think we can do hundreds of samples in an hour. They just scan it and it's loaded into our system via an HL7 interface. So I really like Shadowbox as a tool. They are not paying me to say that, unfortunately. Saying this out loud, I realize maybe I could get them to pay me for saying this, but that's a conversation for another time. I cover that. Yes. Experian Health, formerly Wave HDC, another tool that we use. This is a discovery and eligibility tool on the RCM side. This one just happens to work really nicely. They were able to integrate with our RCM platform in about a week or so, and their integration into our RCM platform is literally just two buttons: check eligibility, and do discovery. So as part of our workflow, rather than have our staff on the RCM side, our billing team, go to Passport, check insurance through Passport, then separately go to Medicare, then separately go to Optum if the patient's insurance is not covered by Passport, and look at all of these various lists, they're able to just do that right from the RCM itself without having to leave the program. So they check eligibility, check discovery, and then it populates directly into our system right alongside a digitized copy of the requisition form and the any prior test results if those are there. So there are other tools to do this. I don't want to specifically endorse any one specific thing. I just happen to think that this works a little bit more smoothly and covers the largest range of different data points for patient insurance. I think we're... slid this slide in. This is just an example of the output from Wave Now Experian Health's eligibility platform. So it'll identify the various areas where there are low confidence data points for that patient's insurance, and depending on how well you want to integrate, they can actually backload that information directly into the RCM, so they're not trying to manually type from the little PDF window into the system. It can just load that directly. It's a question of your confidence index with the data that you're getting, with your team's ability, with what you're actually getting from Experian, but for us, it's worked really well. The next tool that we've implemented is E5's workflow technology. E5's workflow is a really nice means of obviating the need for various FTEs to try and manage data in the RCM and serve relevant claims once a claim has been accepted. So you're getting a huge number, I'm sure probably 30 to 50% of claims are getting denied for one reason or another, right? Prior authorization or ICD-10s or CO-45, whatever. That process, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but that process traditionally relies on a lot of tribal knowledge within the team. And typically what you're doing is assigning work in one of two ways. Once a claim has been created and submitted and has been adjudicated in some capacity, those denials are managed either by team or by member. If you've got a team, you've got people that are managing contracts and trying to write off various non-payable denials, or you're trying to run things by member where you've got individual staff members that are assigned tasks to run through the denial list or the workable claims list and identify which claims they're going to work. And I think both of those workflows have challenges. If you've got a quota-based platform or a quota-based system for your team, the teams that, you know, you've got somebody that comes in on a Monday and they're just tired and hungover, the opportunity exists for them to cherry-pick specific claims that they know are easier to work just so that they can get their numbers up, right? And I don't say that to fault anybody specifically or to speak negatively on people that are running through claims, but the reality is when faced with a variety of different claims to work, the lowest hanging fruit, the easiest claims to work are likely to be the ones that they are going to choose. So you end up with people that are trying to push their quota volumes or their quota numbers up by sort of cherry picking easy ones, and you have an inherent problem of who is there in the billing team today, who's working the claims, how well do they know how to work the claims, how do they pick which claims to work, and you can walk them through that workflow time and time again, but if that person isn't there or if there's turnover on your team, you have to do that again and again. And it becomes this ongoing educational challenge that I think RCM teams tend to face. And of course, you have the feedback problem, right? If they're working through that and they're trying to run through claims, they are not subsequently also creating lists of, and today I noticed that I'm getting a lot of UHC denials for this specific claim type, and they all fall into this category, right? You've got sort of a dual obligation by member where they have to not only try to identify claims and work them, but also capture those data and identify trends. It becomes very labor intensive and you have to expect a lot from people, and I don't think that that's a reasonable method. So this is an example. This is if you're running things on the RCM side by member or by team, really, it becomes sort of a Sunday process where one person who has this tribal knowledge, for lack of a better expression, making a workflow list of here's the one Excel spreadsheet that everyone needs to work off of and highlighting these are the claims that should be worked and I'm going to assign this person to work this payer and this other person to work this other payer, so on and so forth. And then you get into really technical limitations with that where you've got one Excel file, saved on a server that everybody's accessing. As soon as one person accesses it, it's like an encyclopedia. The minute it's printed, it's out of date. The minute somebody accesses that workflow or that Excel spreadsheet, they could be doing dual work and overlapping with somebody else. Maybe there's some miscommunication, whatever. Now you've got two people working the same claim. And that becomes, it seems like a small challenge until you've had a small laboratory and you recognize that that is a very real, tangible challenge all the time. Are we clicking? No, we're not clicking, let's use. There we go. So this is a little workflow chart speaking to the E5 implementation, the workflow implementation of kind of exactly what we're talking about, right? Like, what are the data that we need? Are we determining the relevant priorities? Are we leading those teams and identifying those priorities and working claims? Then are you developing queues? And then how are you managing the queues that you are developing? What E5 does as a tool, it sort of strikes me as a self-evident thing. E5 takes all of those challenges out of the hands of our staff and allows one singular person or one singular team decision to be made about which claims are going to be worked, and integrates that into our RCM process as an automated background workflow. So I don't know if anyone can see. It seems looks a lot better on the big screen. But essentially, E5 is nothing more complicated than an automated workflow that we determine. So it takes the entire body of claims that are due to be worked and allows our team to prioritize which claims are worked by a variety of different parameters, like the payer, the timely filing limitations, the dollar value of the claim, so on and so forth. And we can say in one session, we want to work firstly Medicare claims of a high dollar value that are the most coming up against timely filing limitations and that have X and Y denial codes that are easy for our staff to push through so that we are pushing out claims that are relevant, right? I think sometimes when you've got a billing staff and they kind of get in the trenches, they're trying to get one particular claim paid, they get this sort of target fixation, right? They have one conversation with somebody from UHC and that person's, you know, whatever, impolite. Now they're determined to get this $5 claim paid because fuck UHC. But that's not really effective from a workflow standpoint for the laboratory in general. And so the way that E5 has integrated directly into our system, it's just a get next button, which is hilariously self-evident. They go into the denial management, you know, workflow. They go into that subsection of our RCM. And instead of making determinations on a case-by-case basis, they just click the one button available to them, and they are served the next most relevant claim based on my and my executive team's determination as to what we want to see worked. So we are working the highest dollar value, highest priority claims as an automated process. So this is an actual screenshot of the E5 tool within our system. And you can see that there is a fairly straightforward workflow here where CO50s are being worked first, then CO16s. I think above this screen that's kind of cut out of the image, we have the determination as to what specific payer types or payer codes are being served first. And this is an actual workflow for one person on our team. And it's worked really, really well for us. I don't know of, again, I don't want to specifically endorse any one individual product, but I don't know of another tool available that does sort of the same thing. I would sort of expect that this would be developed and built into any available commercial RCM. I just haven't seen that. But, you know, I'm also too poor to afford Xyphon, so maybe that's something that I could get down the road. So this is, again, more data from our system, and this is the other side of making data actionable, right, where the team is working through various claims and trying to push things out. The other's expectation would be, in a perfect world, that they make some sort of notation about what claims are being paid and what payer patterns they're seeing. That's not feasible for them to split their time between actually working the claim and capturing those data, but our RCM platform and E5 combine to sort of pull those data out. So these are basically data metrics that we're able to draw from our system and from an entirely automated perspective rather than rely on our team to capture those. This is another specific example from our RCM platform, identifying the various denials of by volume that we're facing. So we have a B7 challenge. If anybody knows what's going on with B7 and Aetna, that'd be great. Please come talk to me after the presentation. But this is an easy report to run. It allows us to pull out from the system what are the types of denials that we're seeing so that we can take those, give that back to our sales team, and allow them to target better. If we're seeing a lot of, you know, missing diagnosis codes or a lot of HMO, for example, that gives us the opportunity to retrain our sales team on qualifying accounts. As a small laboratory, we do not have the coverage of a Quest and a LabCorp. And it's really, really important, as I'm sure it is for all of you, to qualify the accounts that you're taking on as customers so that you're only taking on those that are relevant to you and the business that you're able to serve. All of this sort of starts with the sales team. And the better data that you can get on the back end is highly relevant to being able to give them good targeting data to help them qualify before they're scheduling lunches, before they're getting into practice practices, before they're talking to doctors, and really try to filter the business that we're getting by those that are really a good fit for the offering that we have. And then here's some actual raw data, again, speaking to the denial volume by month over time since we implemented. We've done a really nice job, I think, of managing denials and bringing the total denial volume down because we are able to manage those things within the system more effectively over time. So the idea here is identifying specific challenges, modeling out those challenges, then delivering relevant claims based on that modeling, and then continually feeding that data back in on the front end to ensure that we are doing the best job that we can, right? If we're seeing a huge number of these, you know, B5 denials, or B7 denials, rather, we should be managing that, and then simultaneously, while trying to manage that, mitigating the volume of Aetna claims that we're seeing, avoiding accounts that have a huge subset of Aetna patients. It's not terribly complex stuff if you're a small lab, but I think that it's rather overwhelming with the breadth of data available to implement those things and to make it manageable. And I think implementing tools that make those things more manageable is sort of the name of the game, right? We are well past the days where we could throw volume of staff at solving problems, and we have to rely on the data that we've got. And then the question is, how quickly and efficiently can we pull those data out from our system and implement it in a way that's relevant to us, to our team, and to our targeting? So it's a little challenging. We implemented a lot of these different tools and different vendors simultaneously. And it's a little bit challenging for us to identify specifically the impact that those have had. I can say, by qualifying variables, I can say implementing all of them at the same time, we saw effectively a doubling of our monthly revenue. Which means one of two things. Either these tools are very, very effective, or we were particularly ineffective prior to the implementation of these specific tools. Possibly a little bit of a combination of column A and column B. But finding coverage and doing discovery on claims alone had an impact to the tune of like 75, 77%. So we had 70 of the samples that had come in, they had, you know, old, outdated, irrelevant insurance information. We were able to recover like 77% of those claims just through running the tools. And I think that that's a significantly more effective methodology than relying on people, unfortunately. Because I think as laboratories, we are caught in this position where we don't have a great line of communication with our customers all the time. The customer is represented to the laboratory and vice versa by the sales rep. But let's face it, the reason people get into sales is not because they're good at administrative tasks, right? Salespeople that are busy doing administrative tasks are not selling. So taking those workflows out of the salesperson's hands is going to have a positive impact on their ability to sell and their ability to bring business in the door. I personally have worked in a laboratory that saw salespeople as the most direct link and therefore the most logical conclusion to how do we get the right demographic information, how do we get this rec form corrected, so on and so forth. And I think, you know, at a high level, if you're looking at spreadsheets, that makes sense. They have their most contact. Here's a list of things that we need you to do while you're out in the field. You're sort of killing two birds with one stone. But they're just not effective at it. And it's for various reasons, right? I think people that tend to be salespeople tend to be more gregarious, more bombastic, a little bit less detail-oriented. But it also takes a lot of their time. It's access to accounts, even accounts that you currently have. It's very challenging to work that list. And then you've got, you know, your lab and you've got your rep. There's also 20 other vendors and 20 other products and medications and DME providers, whatever, all vying for the attention of your physician customers. So you're really hampering the sales rep's ability to get these to get the sales in the door by leaning on them to do these specific things. In terms of paper Shadowbox, so I have a line item here. The implementation of Shadowbox, we've got about 30% of our volume coming in via Shadowbox to avoid the really high costs related to direct interfacing. When we have Shadowbox claims, they are accurate and the ICD-10s are there. I think over 90% of the claims that we have come through Shadowbox, come through without issue. We've got all the relevant information. We don't have rec form errors. We don't have mismarks. We don't have date of birth errors. So it's a significant step in getting clean claims out the door, and it's a dramatically more cost-effective option for us than, say, implementing a $15,000 interface on a by-account basis and taking on a per-transaction fee to the tune of, you know, $4 or $5. Yes, sir.
Do you have any other accounts sending in online orders in the other way? Do you have like an online portal that they use as well, or Shadowbox is a portion of it?
I have both. Oh, okay. Yes, but it's a bit of an unfair comparison because our regular online portal is not great, and because with Shadowbox in place, it doesn't make sense to develop that online portal further. So we've got a little bit of both, but most of the customers that we have now have transitioned away, because there's really no sense in working a bad tool, right? And if Shadowbox is that much better, which in my experience it is, I don't think that there's value. So apologies. The question was, do we have an online portal direct to our LIS separately and independently of Shadowbox? And again, the answer is yes, but why use it? It's bad. Awesome. I'm interested to get feedback from you after this, because I have long been saying I don't know of any other tools other than Shadowbox that does what Shadowbox does. I would like to update that and say, yes, there are other tools, but this one's better, and I know of this other one. Okay. Are there any other questions that I can speak to specifically? Yeah.
Because as humans, we can make errors, right? I mean, so it's like, does it give you an output to say, hey, I think you guys were off
There's, to my knowledge, and I think Michael Marshall from E5 is around here somewhere. He can probably speak to that. But to my knowledge, that is not a function built in. There would have to be some like OCR functionality within the contract itself to make that determination. And also, just because you have a contract doesn't necessarily make that specific payer the easiest payer, right? What we're trying to do, and I think what we've been relatively effective at doing, is distilling that tribal knowledge down from, you know, here's what the contract says, here's what our actual experience is with that contract, and then implementing that as a workflow to serve and deliver the most relevant claims to our staff. I haven't had to specifically manage that process. Again, I apologize, I am remiss on not repeating the question. The question was, does E5 have the ability to load the contracts in directly and sort of entirely automate the process? The answer is no, but I don't know that I would want to take that step, right? I want some degree of human control, whether it's me, whether it's my executive team, in terms of determining, yeah, sure, we have a contract with UHC, but they're really difficult to work with, or what have you. All right, any other questions?
Do you use any of this data or Siphon, as you mentioned, or any others, to look at bringing on new testing to your lab?
That is an area where we do rely on our sales reps. The question is, do we use these data in terms of determining which services to bring on, which testing to bring on? That is an area where I do think it's relevant to use sales reps rather than to try and automate. Certainly you can look at the CLFS, you can reverse sort by whatever, column G, you can identify the highest paying claims, but that's, I don't think, not the most relevant way to identify the testing that you should be offering, because every lab is going to have a slightly different volumetric makeup of customers that have slightly different needs. And I think customer service is the name of the game in this space, right? Nobody here, unless Quest is actually here, is going to beat Quest on the volume of tests offered, right? But what we can beat Quest on, again, I don't mean to call Quest out specifically, is customer service, is getting in front of our specific customers, identifying what are the challenges that you're facing with your patient population, what is it that you're not able to do with the diagnostics available, and how can we help you manage that process, and what specific assays are relevant to you. So one of the things that has come up recently through those specific conversations is cancer biomarker testing has come up. I don't know if that is specific to our customers in terms of need or has been sort of implanted into their brain as something that's relevant in this space, but looking at, especially with urology, with the infectious disease, UTI, STI diagnostics, are those recurrent UTIs, STIs, are they indicative of a greater, larger problem? And then how do I manage that? How do I provide better coverage for my patients? So I think being able to get that feedback and then manage that through the CRM, that's been effective, and I think customers have appreciated that. We routinely get feedback from our customers that they value the level of customer service that we provide. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, absolutely, right? That's the inverse of that question. The question was, do we use the data to identify tests that are not profitable? And the answer is yes, unfortunately. You could very easily put these data in place and then make a determination a year ago and say, wow, vitamin D is really not paying well these days. But yeah, we absolutely do. We actually had a lot of requests for LPPLA2, heart disease state biomarker, and we had a lot of customers ask for it a couple of years ago, but the cost is really exorbitantly high to run and maintain, and we just dropped that from our panel. because there was a misalignment between the perceived demand for something and then the actual utilization of that thing. So we did, in fact, just great timing. I'm glad that I gave you that question to ask earlier. There was highly relevant to drop that off. I think our spend on that test was something like 16x what our revenue capture was from it, because all of these data are relevant, right? They can order the test, they want the test, but if it's not covered, if it's experimental, if it's PGX circa 2014, it doesn't make sense to maintain, and you get this same target fixation from an executive level that I think customers have in a practice level, right? You're looking at, these are the things that we've implemented. We're proud of these things. We're giving good customer feedback. Our customers want these things. They must be good. And the data does not align. And as much as you want to be a good steward of diagnostics, you want to provide good customer service, it's not sustainable to maintain things that are non-profitable, much to my chagrin. Any other questions that I can answer?
Can you talk to your staffing through your growth?
Yeah, we've got more volume, better margin, and fewer people now. So the question was, can we speak to our staffing through our growth? When we started, we had a billing team that was, I think, 11 people, and we had multiple FTEs that were dedicated to just cleaning up the data, just going in and identifying, is this patient's insurance relevant? Is this the right insurance? Are they eligible for this service? And just through the implementation of Experian, formerly Wave, we were able to eliminate the need for two of those staff people to do eligibility and verification. And Wave's, formerly Wave, now Experian's, process was so much more streamlined that we didn't have to maintain different usernames and passwords for Passport and to separately check Optum and to separately check CMS. And those small challenges, I think username and password alignment, right? You don't think of that as like a workflow challenge, but if you get hands-on, and I like to be pretty hands-on, if you get hands-on with your staff in any capacity, I think it's easy to identify areas like that where, oh, the username and password didn't match, and I tried and I couldn't figure it out, so I just gave up, right? And that's an immensely frustrating thing from a management perspective, but it is absolutely a challenge that happens. And to obviate that need, we have tried to streamline to the best of our ability. So my intent with the implementation of Sphere, Shadowbox, E5, NeuroLab, my intent was to take everything and amalgamate all of these different tools and let them live in one ecosystem so that our staff is leaving that ecosystem as infrequently as possible. So we've reduced, I think, two people specifically for the eligibility and verification, and then we reduced our accessioning team volume by 4 just through streamlining, primarily utilization of Shadowbox because it's just substantially easier. And I think at least another 1 or 2 on the billing side. And this is long range. This is over, you know, a better part of a decade. We've eliminated another 1 or 2 full-time staff members just to manage and curate the data through the implementation of E5, the E5 workflow. So at this point, the lab feels a little empty, but our margins are better than they have ever been, and our turnaround time for samples is still 24 to 48 hours. My target time, top to bottom, from sample receipt to clean claim being billed out, is 5 days. I want something that comes in on Monday to be finalized, complete, and submitted to the payer by Friday, or heads will roll, in case anybody from my lab is here. Sure. Yeah, that's a really good question. The question was, does our Salesforce have access to the CRM? We still do a lot of hands-on. We have a small sales force, so we don't have a terribly sophisticated CRM platform in place. There hasn't been anything that we've really loved. My challenge with CRMs, I'm a salesperson, you know, by training. My problem with CRMs is that CRMs take medium salespeople and they make them good, but they also take excellent salespeople and make them good. It's a great equalizer. It makes things very predictable, but I think it tends to get in the way of really high-performing people that are also not terribly efficient at administrative tasks. I think there's a little bit of a misalignment in the space between those things. So what we've done is curated the data. We pull the reports through E5. We pull the reports through NeuroLab, and then we are managing that on an individual basis with individual reps. So our VP of sales is walking our team through that. And I think our sales team is only about 20 people, so it's pretty small. I think in terms of scaling, there's value, of course, in CRMs, but we get enough of the data, to my belief, we get enough of the data from the various tools that we have implemented that we can have sort of a one-on-one targeting conversations with our team.
I
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. I have a lot of challenge related to CRMs. I think that it's labor intensive to do it the way that we do it, but you get better targeting, right? You can give salespeople the CRM, and again, I come from a very large lab that had tried rather unsuccessfully to implement a CRM, and my takeaway from that experience was, you really need to be on top of people to push them to use that platform unless you are walking them through it, you know, in sort of a hand-holdy kind of method. I think the hand-holdy method is not scalable, but I think it's more effective. So maybe I'm willing to give up a little bit of efficiency in the interest of efficacy. Any other questions? Any other CRM-related questions so I can continue to complain about those? Salesforce, oh, I got a lot of things to say about that. Yeah, I heard some of that. Okay.
Well, thank you, Seth. Thank you. Very insightful, very helpful.
Pleasure.
Definitely. So I want to know, how many people have the Whova app installed? Oh, awesome. Great. So you have the opportunity to give feedback on this awesome session that Seth just presented to us on here. And then more Q&A, I guess, as well. I don't know.
Yeah, we got a couple of extra minutes, so I'm happy to.
But there's an app as well. You can ask more questions on the app.
I will stay on top of my app utilization all week, and answer any questions that come at me.
Yes. Well, thank you.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.